Of all the TV shows about monstrous rich people, the HBO series Succession might be one of the most cutting. It follows heartless media mega mogul Logan Roy and his ruthless children as they try to outmaneuver each other. And while the family is awful, the show is great.
Created by Jesse Armstrong, the show stars Brian Cox, Jeremy Strong, Alan Ruck, Sarah Snook, and Kieran Culkin, among others. And if you're not watching it, you're missing out on a lot of high-quality scheming. I'm Glenn Weldon.
And I'm Linda Holmes, and we're rollicking in the mud with the very rich on today's Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. So don't go away.
Support for this NPR podcast and the following message come from Curio Collection by Hilton, inviting you to choose from a fascinating list of independent hotels around the world, each with its own story to tell. The Candler Hotel in Atlanta and the C. Baldwin in Houston are two of the collection's finest examples of repurposing history to create distinct experiences for their guests. Named after local legends, soda magnate Asa Griggs Candler and the mother of Houston, Charlotte Baldwin. Are you curious? Visit Hilton.com/NPR.
Welcome back. You just met Glenn Weldon of the NPR Arts Desk, and we have a great panel today. In our third chair is NPR Weekend Edition's books editor, Barry Hardiman. Hi, Barry.
Hi, Linda.
And in our fourth chair, it has been way too long, I must
say.
Been
a month of Sundays.
Gene Demby, the co-host of NPR's Code Switch podcast, is with us. Hi, Gene.
How's it going?
Before we get into this, let me just give you a little bit of a sense of what's going on. We are currently at the beginning of the second season of this show. And in the first season, you followed Kendall, the son played by Jeremy Strong, as he was disappointed not to be his father's successor and then engaged in a series of maneuvers to try to unseat his father. And then at the very end of the season, perhaps with victory within reach, he thought, and here we are spoiling the end of the first season, so be warned. He basically went out with a waiter at a party to get some drugs and had a Chappaquiddick-like car accident. You're clearly meant to get that reference. And the waiter died. And so Kendall, feeling quite imperiled, went back and begged for his father's help. So now Kendall is back under his father's thumb. His efforts to unseat him have failed. And we find Kendall in rehab at the beginning of this season because, oh, yeah, he's also off the wagon. So I want to start with Glenn. Glenn, you have been known to make comments that this is maybe the best thing on TV right now.
Well, I mean, I, like a lot of people, judging by the ratings, kind of slept on the first season.
Yeah.
And that was for a bunch of reasons. One, my media diet is filled up with rooting for sociopaths, and that's just not a thing I want to keep doing.
Yeah.
Also, rich people being rich richly is just not a genre, from Dynasty to the Kardashians.
I always say these people might as well be wizards and elves, it's up my personal alley, regardless of quality.
And lastly, whenever anybody would mention the show to me, I would think they were talking about Billions. It's because, like, I'd be like, that show?
Yeah.
But I don't think you're going to find better combination of writing and acting anywhere else, because what they're doing is they're creating characterizations which are, they're odious people, but they are discreetly, distinctly odious. Like the character played by Kieran Culkin, Roman, is a worm. Mm-hmm. The character played by Matthew McFadyen, Tom, the husband of Shiv, the daughter, is a weasel. So, and they are different kinds. You've got Brian Cox going full Lear on the
wolf.
Heath.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Well,
yes.
The thing that's really funny is, of course, Brian Cox, actually well known for playing King Lear, is playing the King Lear part. This show is a lot of things, not subtle.
Yeah, absolutely.
I love. It's grand.
Right. But you'd think that those younger actors would be blown off the screen. But, I mean, if you notice, Roman never sits. He slouches. He perches. He leans.
Arches.
He arches. And Siobhan has this disbelieving smirk that she busts out every so often, because if you grew up in that family being pitted against each other, you would not believe anything told to you. And that's the face that you would meet the world with. Even at the beginning of the first season, when Jeremy Strong as Kendall had a swagger to him, that kind of finance bro swagger, you could still see the wounded little boy inside him because of that face. That face of his. So I think it's brutal. I think it's cynical. I think it's funny. No spoilers, but we get some good Jerry content coming.
Yeah. Jerry is the woman who is one of the kind of right hands of Logan Roy. She's one of the... I love this show. I enjoyed writing about this show. I love talking about this show. I frequently forget the specifics of, and this is where what Glenn was talking about with, like, it sounds like something I wouldn't care about.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I really, like, all of the, like, hostile takeover, bear hug, whatever. I'm like, yeah, yeah, yeah. I don't keep track of all that stuff. I don't keep track of what the finance stuff is. I just know who's putting the screws to who at different times. Gene, it makes so much sense that you would love the show, and I don't know why.
I'm trying to figure out why I like this show so much as well. Like, it feels like there's often too much attention paid in real life to, like, very wealthy, very powerful families who do terrible, terrible things to the world, and less attention paid to, like, the havoc they wreak.
Mm-hmm.
And so this show should, like, it should be very, very off-putting. And this show is obviously all about, like, the machinations and dramas inside this family. And somehow, like, the schadenfreude that you feel, like, watching these people suffer is often offset by these glimmers of, like, humanity. You see, like, Kendall and Shiv in particular sort of get these moments of, like, these, like, little glimmers of hope. Like, they might
There's
actually...
There's a human in there.
They might not be completely magnanimous in their motivations, but they're not, like, always evil, right? Mm-hmm. And so every time you see that sort of hope or that sort of goodness sort of snuffed out because their father is an abuser, right? Like, he is, like, doing the classic abuser thing, like, I'm cutting you off from all of the other avenues of, like, agency you may have.
Mm-hmm.
Everything on this show, I actually don't know how long it can sustain this, right?
Yes,
just because it is very, very, like you said, it's brutal. And also, like, how long can we watch this the same people be debased by this monstrous person at the center of their lives? Mm-hmm. I just don't know. But it is riveting.
And I have to say, one of the things that I noticed about, that I think might make this work for me, although I agree with you that Kendall and Shiv in particular both have these kind of flashes of there is a person in there, that person is always sort of subjugated to the, you know, the rewards of being part of this system of power and money.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the things I wrote about in the review is, like, in some ways the thesis of this show, I originally thought the thesis of this show was rich people are all miserable, so having money's not that great, right? But I actually came to believe that part of the thesis of the show is they're all awful, even though some of them seem like they might be fun to have a drink with, right? Like, Shiv seems like she could be an entertaining woman to have a glass of wine with. Roman is probably funny to have a drink with on certain days, depending on what he wants to dish about.
Absolutely.
Kendall, I certainly pity, right? But it doesn't matter, because when push comes to shove, they all go right back. You know, the show sets it up like Kendall at the end of the first season has no choice because his back is against the wall. But it's like, of course he has a choice. He can just go tell the truth. And not,
he would have to suffer.
But he wouldn't be in this position with his father kind of humiliating him and all that.
That's
Barry,
right.
Talk to me about Succession. I've made you wait too long.
Truly, I've never been so excited than when I heard you were watching it. This is, and I will also out myself as a person who watches both Succession and Billions.
Right, okay.
Which are two very different lanes of this kind of thing. And this is the very clearly the Shakespeare, or I mean, at least the Jacobean drama of those two things. And for me, it has most what I love beyond the specificity of character that you're talking about, I think is amazing, is that every single action that is made by an actor on this shows me something about not just who is inside them, but what the world is like around them. So Matthew McFadyen, who is truly the comic relief.
Playing Tom, who is Shiv's husband. So not a blood relative of the family, but
Oh, and Shiv's the blood is the real, I mean, this is the season in which he discovers that this thing is not a family.
Yeah.
It's an aristocracy.
Yeah.
He does not have the right last name. What you see flicker across his face when he makes every move is all of the motivations that can go into somebody making a disgusting choice. So you can see him be hurt by something that maybe Cousin Greg, who is this up-and-coming young family member who's also climbing this horrible ladder. You know, with Greg in particular, you see him be actually, like, you know, wielding his power, because he can only wield power with those below him, and he doesn't have that many. But you also see him, his pain at being in the place that he is. And so it's not necessarily an empathy that I have for him, but I can see how this world works, because you can see all of the motivations and the pain that is behind each thing. Doesn't mean I forgive them. And if there is any show that shows that you are the sum of your actions more than what is in your heart, it is this one.
It took me a long time to figure out, why is it that the humor between these people, because, you know, Jesse Armstrong, who created this show, comes out of the Armando Iannucci, the thick of it, In the Loop, all of that kind of world, which is comedy, right? Which is more assertively comedy. This is a more of a mix. But the humor is usually the family when they deal with each other. It instantly turns into tragedy every time they touch normal people. So, for example, in the pilot, in the very first episode of the first season, There's a scene in which the family goes to play softball. And Roman, you know, there's a kid there with his parents, and Roman decides to sort of toy with this kid by offering him $1 million and really acting like he means it if the kid can hit a home run. The kid gets a big hit. The family goes ahead and tags him out because it's certainly not something where they're going to give a kid $1 million. And none of it is played for humor at all to me. That entire scene is just ugly, ugly all the way down. It's sort of just pushing around people with less than you and showing off how you can just, you know, give and take away from them.
It is full Caligula. Mm-hmm.
It is terrible. And I think there are a couple of points without spoiling anything in the second season. I have seen a few episodes of the second season. There are some other things that happen where you learn that when these people, when their machinations, as Gene was saying, go out and touch normal humans, it's just wreckage. And some of this came up in the first season as well, but it's really unusual to see a show, I think, talk about media and and new media in a way that seemed as correct as this show often does.
And one thing we should say, by the way, is that the Roy family, this family, is essentially, in many ways, it could be a stand-in for many people. It is nothing so similar as the Murdochs.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And they own ATN, which is a mirror of Fox.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And in fact, this season, I think, very, very smartly, and maybe this is the thing that will give it longevity, has been able to react to what is happening right now in a political climate in which there is no agreed upon set of facts in such a smart way, because what it does is it shows you that there's right, there is left, and then there's money.
That's part market. Yeah,
and that is the, like, it's just like the thing is capitalism. And there's a moment in one very, very smart thing, which I think we can talk about without spoiling, is that in the second season, there's a moment where this set of rich people, the Roys, comes up against another set of rich people. And it is so spot on, because this other set of rich people are maybe the more leftward set of, and they are quoting Richard II at the table.
Also, the casting.
And they are,
it is
pitch perfect.
And they are monsters too.
Right, and they are monsters too. And that is one of the things, Linda, where you're talking about, you know, like when they come up against an actual human, you know, it is tragedy. When they come up against another, you know, set of wizards and elves, it is pure comedy. And I've now watched that episode twice.
Yeah. I think it pays to watch these episodes.
I agree.
Twice. People say, oh, the first season improves as it goes. I don't think it does.
Nope.
I just think this show teaches you how to watch it. And I had the same misgivings you did, Linda. What is this show about? Is this about cynicism? Is it just about, like, reinforcing your every half preconceived notion about the super rich? It kind of is.
It
kind of is. And when a show like that is about Schadenfreude, then I don't think it has to do it. What ultimately draws you in is the way that their schemes sort of start to interlock and you start to see them meshing, and them not trusting each other is what's destroying them consistently over and over and over again. And it's just
and that's where you really get into the thing where it's not, this is not, you know, episodic drama. This is building the way that a play builds.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
It is absolutely theatrical in that way.
And there are so many, as Glenn said, so many kinds of awful rich people, because as Glenn said with the worm versus the weasel, you also have Alan Ruck's character, Connor.
Oh, we haven't talked about him.
Connor is the one who's sort of, he fancies himself the intellectual of the family. And Connor has moved himself out to the sort of the desert. I don't really mingle with you people. I'm a different sort of person. He is their half brother. He has a different mother than the other kids in the family. But I think he also really has just a different way of being a powerful monster. Mm. And you sort of get the feeling at the very beginning that maybe he's the nice one. But as it develops, it's like, oh, no, maybe he's the most dangerous megalomaniac in the entire family, which they cap off at the end of the first season by having him be like, I'm going to run for president.
Right.
And it's sort of that thing of like, what is the thing that you naturally think that you are entitled to if you're raised in this family and there are no limits on kind of what you can have? You wind up thinking, like, I should be the president. And so he decides he's going to run for president on a platform of being against, by the way, the two really bad things he thinks are in the world, which are usury and onanism.
Oh, my God. You know, there's a season in Billions where there is a woman who is deported because of the antics of the rich people. And you see her go, you see all the steps of her journey. In Succession, you rarely linger on the victims. You do not see how it lands. which is partly makes it easier to watch because the you don't get as much Chardon in your Freude. But and I think it's a cleaner, more, you know, better structured piece of drama. But it also means that you have to sort of interrogate yourself.
Right.
And I think the show, you know, makes you confront that in yourself. If you are not looking at the eyes of the victims, you know,
that's how they get through life. That's how these people exist.
For example, with Kendall, at the end of the first season, when he, you know, not intentionally, but certainly negligently / recklessly causes someone's death, they are very good about saying Kendall is upset because Kendall's plan fell apart.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How bad Kendall actually feels about what he did is very murky.
Right.
Kendall is upset because of the position he's now in with his father.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the show is honest about the fact that people like this aren't secretly nice. They aren't secretly normal. Mm. They aren't secretly nice.
How could they be?
Money is like the monkey's paw in this episode, in this series. It comes into your life and it poisons you. Particularly, I found myself watching this weekend and thinking, if you're like a kid born into this family, at what point do you ever have a chance to turn out
normal.
Like a, or not just normal, but like with normal sense of compassion.
Mm-hmm.
Like, where would you learn that?
It's random. We just got back from our honeymoon in Europe, and the whole time we were looking at these castles, like, what a stupid way to run any society. like your kids don't necessarily have any sort of aptitudes for the thing. Mm-hmm. There's nothing about the Roy children that makes them the best candidates to take over for Logan, right? I mean, Shiv is obviously the person who is the most competent.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's no way that Logan is going to give her that role. And so, like, if he wanted his empire to sort of perpetuate itself into the future, it would have to be someone outside of his family. But, of course, he would never entertain that notion. Like, and so he's going to have them all duke it out. But, like, it is literally the dumbest way to choose a successor. They'd be like, well, this person is related to me by blood. Like, necessarily, they don't have any of the sort of pathologies, I mean, that made him who he was, right?
Right.
I mean, if the theme of the show remains Logan always wins, that's not interesting.
Yeah, right.
What is interesting is we know why these kids turn out like this because he is deliberately pitting them against each other because he knows if they ever join forces, he's done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And seeing that happen, eventually happen, is kind of the only hope I have for this thing.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean,
no.
I don't want any of these people to succeed, but it's the nature of drama to empathize with even the monsters in this show.
That is right.
That's what would be satisfying, though.
I just want them to run away.
Or just pour. I mean, you can it's like you can see the ending of someone cradling a body in their hands and standing around with the, you know, holding the knives.
For sure.
But
for
it's,
sure.
Yeah.
I like it. Well, we desperately, as you can tell, want to know what you think about Succession so we can keep talking about it for hours and hours. Come and find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH or tweet us at PCHH. And that brings us to the end of our show. You can follow Barry at B. Hardiman and Gene, as always, at GEEDEE215. Thanks, you guys, for being here. So much fun.
Thank you for having us.
And of course, thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. If you have a second and you're so inclined, please do subscribe to our newsletter. That's at npr.org/popculturenewsletter. We will see you all right back here on Friday when we will be covering the new movie, Where'd You Go, Bernadette? We'll see you then.
These days, Senator Elizabeth Warren is driving around Iowa in an RV campaigning. And on the back,
we have a huge sign that says, "Honk if you want big structural change."
And according to Warren, it is getting attention.
We had truckers coming by, and they were really on the big air horns, and that was fun.
The NPR Politics podcast hit the road to ask Warren about all that structural change she's calling for. Subscribe to listen.